All right? That one, no guesswork, that one is your sponsor. No. That one is your home group. No. Your therapist, your psychiatrist, your wife, your mistress, your husband, your boyfriend. That one is God, period. Okay, now listen, y'all. It says, may you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. Oh, that's right. It was nil, now it's nothing. Okay, I'm starting to get it now. Remember what we said? All in. Not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few. All in. Okay? And it says, we stood at the turning point. Personal observation experience, we stand at the turning point every day. A lot of different turning points during the day. Some are more noticeable, some of them are more miraculous, some of them are more life-changing, but there's a lot of turning points, but we stand at the turning point right here, right now. We stand at the turning point, okay? And since we are, we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. I'm really starting to get it here. There's no half-stepping or whatever. Just like we said earlier, I didn't water down my whiskey. I'm not going to water down my recovery. Never watered it down. Okay. Now it says, here are the steps we took. It doesn't say these are the steps we work. It doesn't say that. These are the steps that we take. These are the steps that we took. It sounds pretty anal, but that's what the book says. It is what it is. Okay. These are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we, big word, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, hyphen, not and, not a comma, not a period. If you're not sure what that is, that's why we have this up here, Webster's Dictionary. I cannot do this book without this book. Hyphen, that our lives have become unimaginable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, and like we like to talk about care and direction, as we read about last week, okay? Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted God to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove. Stay with me on that one. That's one of the most overlooked words in these steps. Remove. Didn't say put up with. Didn't say reduce. Didn't say walk around. It didn't say to nurse them and put them in the back. It said remove. Tall order, okay? Remove, okay, all of these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. So you can see, ladies and gentlemen, the directions thoroughly, completely demands manner of living, any length, all the earnestness, fearless, thorough, let go absolutely, complete and abandoned. I think we get it. Novel concept about this in the third step. The only thing that stays constant is the decision, because guess what? Our will in our life is always changing. Stay with me on that, too, about when we get to the growth steps on there, that in this world there is nothing that stays the same. Everything is constantly changing. Okay, so he goes on to say, many of us exclaim, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like a perfect adherence to these principles. What principles? The 12 steps that he just put down. We are not saints. And everybody loves to get, you know what? I rip somebody off, I can lie. Well, we ain't saints. Well, how about if we focus in, as a rule, we must be hard on ourselves but always considerate of others. A lot of drunk traps in this book, and that's one of them. I hear that so many times it makes me sick. I know we're not saints, but you better use it in the whole context of where it's at on there as well. If you're going to pick and choose, you better be careful. on what it is. You play with fire, you're going to get burned. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down, which were the 12 steps, are a guide to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, that is in the doctor's opinion, some in Bill's story, in chapters 2 and 3. The chapter to the agnostic, chapter 4. And our personal adventures before and after. Where are our personal adventures? They are in chapters 1, 2, 3, and in the back of the book. Make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own lives. Step 1. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Step 2. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. That also is step 2. Therefore, it says right after that, being convinced we were at step 3. So step 1 and 2 is from the cover page up to 60. We've established that. So now that we've done that, and it's important, I'll speak for myself, that I take that famous how it works and really break it down to see what he's saying on there. And then I get it. So, a little bit of information by here. This came from a long time ago. I call the guy Socrates, but it's actually Socrates. Socrates, oh, there I go again. He was a Greek philosopher. He lived a long time ago, 469 to 379 BC. You know what Socrates, there I did it again. You know what Socrates said? I'm going to quote. I'm say, what is he talking about? Well, this is what he's talking about. An unexamined life is a life not worth living. Wow. That's a pretty smart fella, isn't he? Yeah, I would say that's still applicable in 2017. So why we inventory? It's real, real important. I have to know where I've been so I know where I'm at so I know where I'm going. It is not an option. It's something that I have to do. It is a requirement for recovery. So I have to inventory. We find out a few things in this part of the inventory, the process of resentments. Going to jump the gun. First, we find the truth about them. Then we find how we get rid of them. And then we find out how to keep them from coming back. And tonight, we will find out that, for the most part, we can live resentment-free. I suppose that's why in step 10, where we continue to take a personal inventory. I can't continue something in 10 if I haven't done it in 4. Oh, novel concept about that too. Okay, so here's one of the most important things about tonight. And it really changed everything. People aren't doing things to me. They're doing things for themselves. In other words, I'm not that damn important for somebody to be doing something to me. Boy, what a disappointment that was, okay? Not that damn important. Oh, that's right, Rule 62. Also, I find the truth about them. You know who them are, right? And I find out the truth about myself. Through this inventory process, I'll give you a disclosure of that. I always fantasize and picture myself that I was a big-time gangster. Yeah, Al Capone, John Gotti, you know, big-time gangster, yeah, right? Yeah, tough guy, you know, all that stuff and all that. When I did the inventory, you know what I found out? I was Dennis the Menace, just a pain in the ass, so yeah. Now that's the truth! Didn't like to see it, but it's the truth, and that's what we find out about. It's beautiful. So, in case you weren't here, last week, we talked about making that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care and direction of God. And that's how Bill wanted to write it. And I always use that direction because we find out that's what will is, direct. We have God's will that directs and we have man's will that directs. So we're going to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. This is not a new concept because let's face it, we made that decision. We turn it over to alcohol, to him, to her, to whatever we have. Look, we're all here tonight. So it's not a new concept. The new concept is we're going to make a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God, our conception that we're good with. And, you know, we talked about last week about, you know, Everybody's got a script. I write a script for my wife, my kids, my boss, and whatever. And bad thing about it is they got a pencil, paper. They're writing their script, and we get together, and it don't mesh. So anyhow, I always talk about writing the script. And he talks about the actor and so on and so forth. Never forget, a couple years ago, he says, man, I can't believe you're talking about scripts. I said, what are you talking about? He says, last time I wrote a script, I did 2 years down in Mansfield. I said, no, not that kind. That's not what we're talking about. So anyhow, so what we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to separate the men from the boys. And you notice I didn't do this because I misspelled it last week. The decision and commitment. Reminds me of a story. Yes, I'm sure you're well aware of the story. About the chicken and the pig walking down the road. You know how the churches always have those cutesy things. In fact, there's probably one out here. There's not, whatever. But a lot of good stuff on there. Anyhow, the chicken and the pig were walking down the road, and they saw a sign on the church that said, come in and feed the hungry. And the chicken goes, man, that's a great idea. Why don't we go ahead and do that? And the pig looks at him and says, you got to be kidding me. The chicken goes, what's the matter? Well, the pig says, it's real simple. For you, it's a decision. You can go in and lay eggs and go about your business. The pig says, for me, it's a commitment. Because I got to give bacon. I got to give ham. I got to give it all. So now, are we going to be a chicken and lay more eggs and keep on walking? Or are we going to be like the pig and make that commitment? And once we make that decision tonight, we're going to be the pig, and we're making the commitment. So stay with us in here, and you'll see what we're talking about. So, here we are. You might want to write this down. Moral. What does that mean? It's not immoral or amoral. It's moral. According to Webster's, it's the truth. The lesson to be learned. Remember that spiritual axiom, what's the moral of the story? It's the truth of the story. It's the lesson that we learned. It's not immoral or amoral. We're not writing down bad things, a dirty list of the acid path and all that. No. Moral. It's a moral inventory. It's the truth. The lesson to be learned. Inventory. What does that mean? Oh, it's a list. Yeah, it's a list. An inventory is a list. I get it. Okay. It is a written list. Paper. You might want to write this down. He talks about on page 64, we set them on paper. Oh, that's the resentments. On page 68, we put them on paper. Oh, that's our fears. On page 69, we got all this down on paper. That's our sex conduct. So if we're going to do the deal, I must have paper, I must have an inventory, a written list, and I must be moral, the truth of it. Now I'm starting to get down to this where it's palatable. I get it. I misunderstood it. So, a list. He uses it four times. One, two, three, four. You might want to write this down too. We made a list. We turned back, made a list on page 59. We turned back to the list on page 66. On our grudge list, page 65. And he says, referring to our list again, page 67. Written. It says, we have written a lot on page 70. It's important that I need to have a handle on this before we go any further, because if not, I can't do the deal. Okay, so now, we will see where we're going with this. Remember on page 45, he said, the main object of this book is enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will solve the problem. I don't, you don't, the power does. So guess what? In that vein, that's what we're going to do. We're going to get connected. Remember, we established that's what the rest of this book is, how to get the power. Remember, we heard it, one power, that one is God. Okay, so now I'm going to look at the things within me that have been blocking me off from making that decision I made in step three. Obviously, let's see what he says. Here we are, at the bottom of page 65. And it says, I can't even read these pages. If you saw this damn thing, you know what I'm talking about. There is no page numbers on this. My bad. I really can't read it. So, and it says, next, So remember, there's directions. Remember last week, it said first, next, then. So now he's doing it. And this is why all the guys that I sponsored, and I beat you up last week, you're going to be on your knees, you're going to be writing. So once we do that decision, you better get ready, because it says next. We launched out on a course of vigorous action. Not vigorous talking, not vigorous philosophizing, not vigorous dancing around the thing, vigorous action. Oh, that's right. There's a chapter called Into Action. I get it. Okay. And it says the first step, which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. No kidding. Okay. Though our decision, third step, was vital. Remember, we established vital, a matter of life and death. Remember, you're in the intensive care. What do? They check your vitals. If your vitals go too low, so do you. You're gone. Vital. It's a matter of life and death, okay? Vital and crucial step. Talking about the third step, it can have little permanent effect. So I can do the third step, but if I don't get on it, it ain't going to do me anything for any long time. Permanent effect unless at once. Remember I told you the time frame? If you want what we have, then you're willing. It says after the third step, at once. That's within reason, obviously. At once, I don't think means a month or a year or even a week. At once, within reason. You know, we're reasonable about this. But it tells us at once, okay? At once, okay? Followed by a strenuous, effort. So here's why we do the fourth step. And who wouldn't want to do this? To face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. So I got news for you. It's no longer mommy and daddy. It's no longer your race, your color, all the things that we're using. Things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Oh, that's right. It's an inventory of ourselves. Okay? And it says, our liquor was but a symptom. So we had, not should, not could, not ought to, we had to get down to causes and conditions. Oh, I get it. Okay. Now, obviously, and it says, therefore, we started on a personal inventory. This was step four. So, you thought you were going to get off easy with that first paragraph, but not so. So what has been blocking me off? Well, we're going to inventory. Resentment. Remember? We all got this. Remember? I got one of them in here, right? The self sheet. I hate when that happens.
That folder right there. Oh, you took them all.
Took them all. I've got it in here somewhere. So what's been blocking me? All from self. That's why I said you got to have this. This is what's been blocking me. These wrongs, and it's not what we think it is. The wrongs are resentments, incorrect believing. Wrongs are fears, incorrect believing. The resentments, incorrect thinking. Harms are hurts. Incorrect actions would produce guilt, shame, and remorse. Is that yours?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for borrowing it. I got it up here somewhere, I hang. So, what has been blocking me off? The resentments, the fear, the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the wrongs on the sheet. And obviously, we inventory the wrongs done to others. Here's why we're doing it. It's not by chance that I've been given the power to reason, to think, to react, to draw a conclusion. The book, we've already covered it, but we're going to go back. The book says it was man's most magnificent attributes. Page 53, if you want to go back to that. Now, here's why those things are great in Jim Dandy, but guess what? Couldn't use them. I didn't know how to use them, so I misused them. Couldn't use them, so I'm going to misuse them. So now I'm getting ready to learn how to use the powers which God gave me to use from the get-go. Novel concept. And those powers he gave us are reasoning, ability to think, wonder about things based on the information to get the proper direction in life. Remember, what is will, mind, thinking, thinking, arise, control, direction, to get the right direction. And here it is again. Remember how it was, the textbook from the beginning. Remember Jim's story. Chapter 3, page 35, if you want to write this down. Who did steps 1, 2, 3. Remember old Jim? But failed to enlarge his spiritual life, or he wouldn't do steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. And guess what happened to old Jim? Yeah, he got drunk. The old 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, right out the door. Okay? So we don't end up like Jim getting drunk. We're getting ready to do steps 4 through 11 in the book. Okay? In other words, I'm carrying out the decision I made in 3, so I need to do step 4. Isn't that so simple? That's too simple. Step 4, personal observation, probably gives us more trouble than any other 12 steps. A couple reasons. I'll give you this first one. There's a lot of confusion about step 4. And here's how it was. In fact, my third time in treatment, this is how they told me to do it. Somewhere we got an idea that step 4 was a autobiography. And somewhere along the line, we got an idea. It was a list about dirty, filthy, nasty items that we didn't want to look at those things, much less, oh, hell no, I got to take it to grave stuff. I ain't going to tell nobody or nothing. No how, no way. Therefore, we tend to procrastinate on step 4. Procrastination is like masturbation, boys and girls. You're only doing yourself if you don't do this, okay? Somebody said procrastination is a bad thing if I ever get around to doing it. Now, that's a real alcoholic, so. It tells us when to do this. It says at once. Now, here's another reason that we get a hang-up and we're going to lose them. We lose them all. In fact, some ain't going to be coming back after tonight, and I get it. Here's another reason for doing step 4. Step 3 removes just enough of self-will to look at ourselves, and if we don't get on it, talking about step 4, self-will, I'm going to borrow this again, self will come back and it'll tell you, well, you really don't need to do that. And then fear steps in and says you don't dare do that. Oh, that's right. Self will come back, and it does all the time. So we keep putting it off, so we're robbing ourselves out of possibly any peace of mind. The second reason, I believe, is confusion, and I will get it. He's already filled this example out, at least the first 3 columns. I get that. Never know why until you go to heaven and meet the first 100, and particularly Bill, why he did it that way. And I get it. It can be a little bit confusing. But here it is. The instructions are in the book. They are so short. We alcoholics with our keen intellectual mind are looking for something more complicated and overlook the simplicity of this program. And like I said, it's already filled out. Somebody jumped over into step 5 where it says something about your life story and people, like I said, write an autobiography. Editorial experience. 95% of my life story has nothing to do with my alcoholism. The 5% of my life story that does is hidden by the 95%, and I get up here and give you a litany of the poor me, poor me, poor me, and I am a victim. Victims never get better. Victims stay sick. Victims die. And here's about the thing with the resentment steps. I get news to you, too. 95% of my life story has nothing to do with my alcoholism. It probably does with a lot of other people because I drove them to drink, but that's a different story for a different day. Okay. So in our confusion, and I've seen it before, you go to enough meetings, you walk in and, I'm going to say it again, disgusting meetings or whatever, you go back to the literature table, and they got this guide and that guide to do the steps, and this and whatever. And here's the experience with these guides. We got mixed up. They got a guide, and they took some of this out here, and then somebody was writing that. Some of them come from Minnesota. Some of them come from California. Some of them probably come from BFE. I'm sure some come from Mars. I saw one that had over 25 pages on how to do this. I guarantee you, if you weren't crazy as hell before you started it, you would be after that. If you weren't drinking before that, you would be after that, because it's not what the four-step inventory in this program, in this book is. Okay, so obviously, the instructions were in the book all the time. We couldn't figure it out. Probably because we didn't know how, and here's another thing. Remember how Bill, and we've established this obviously in Appendix 2 when he uses those different words for change, the 13 different words, and uses a lot of words interchangeably. Remember that style doesn't change, okay? He uses what we know about and gives us an example, and he teaches that. Remember we talked about the ocean liner, talked about the actor from Broadway. He talks about something, the actor running the whole show. He continues that style with this step. He does that when he talks about this business inventory. I couldn't get it. He talked about the business inventory, assuming that we know something about a business in the inventory process. He tells us to do the same thing in our lives. He's told you, I told you what I'm going to do in this business inventory. If we can see Bill's style and are aware of that, it makes it very easy to understand this thing. In other words, he likes to use different words to mean the same thing. So when he talks about shortcomings, defects of character, he talks about sins, he talks about flaws, he uses words interchangeably all the time, and we'll see that. If you're not careful, you can get tripped up when he's doing. Keep it in mind that he likes to talk about what we know about. We face the fact that he loves to use different words to mean the same thing. So let's see these instructions for the inventory. They are so short, it amazes me. Obviously, it amazes me. And here's what he says. Therefore, we start on a personal inventory. This was step 4. He talks about a business, which takes no inventory, usually goes broke. All of us in here would probably agree with that. Okay? Yeah. Taking a commercial inventory. See, he just did it then. He could have used the word business, but he used the word commercial because he doesn't like to repeat himself more than he has to. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. That's what we find out we're doing here. Fact-finding, fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. Now he tells us about this fact-finding, fact-facing process. One object is disclosed damaged or unsellable goods. The good stuff don't make a business go bad. The good stuff in us don't make us sick and don't make us drunk. So don't let anybody tell you write down the good things, because if they do, it isn't what we're doing. We're facing be rid of the things that are blocking us. Damaged and unsellable goods. Okay, so he goes on to say, okay, damaged or unsellable goods, object one, and to get rid of them promptly, that's right away, and without regret. So you don't get a hanky and issues with tissues and all that crap. You get rid of them. Come on, y'all. Get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about these values. Now, we've got this, and here we are with paper. I'll be so glad. I bet you we used, I don't know how much paper we used. If we can get that out, thank you. We've taken the liberty. To do what Bill has done there. In other words, look on the left side, look on the right side, if you would be so kind to do this. Step 4, inventory comparison. He gave us the example on business, but it says we did exactly the same thing with our lives. Period. Not sort of, not close, not kind of. Exactly as the business does. So here's what we've done. Real simple. Business listed on the left, personal on the right. I can do that. Business. Either the business goes broke or the personal goes broke. The business goes out of business. Us personally, we get drunk. I get it. So if I don't do this, I'm done. Okay? Like I said, that's real simple. So here's what he says. Remember, he said it's a fact-finding. What is step four? We made a searching, fearless moral inventory. Searching. When you're fact-finding, you are doing searching. He says we're doing fact-facing in the business. That would be fearless. When you fact-find, that's searching. When you face the fact, fact-facing, that's fearless. He talks about the truth on the business side. Oh, that's right. Moral. We talked about that. Not amoral, not immoral. Don't know a whole lot about Bill Wilson other than I can guarantee you one thing. He was a master of this English language. If he wanted a list of dirty, nasty, filthy things, he would have said we made a searching, fearless, moral, or fearless and searching, immoral, or amoral. Look it up. That's not what it is. Moral inventory, okay? The truth. The stock and trade on business. What is our stock? Obviously, we are our only stock. Damaged and unsellable goods. That's what the business has got to get rid of. My mind is the real problem centers in the mind. Remember, stinking thinking leads to drinking. If my thinking's bad today, I'll make bad decisions. I'll act on it. My life's going to be bad. So we look for the flawed thinking process, the things that block me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Remember to face and be rid of the things that are blocking me. It's me, okay? Get rid of them promptly and without regret. So when I find these things, I get rid of them promptly and without regret. So obviously, you can see that. And we get rid of them promptly without regret. Get willing and ask God, step 6 and 7, after step 5. Says, cannot be fooled about values. Got to see what they really are. Move away from delusion, illusion, rationalization, justification. On the business side, leads to bankruptcy. Neglect on us leads us back to where we came from. And that ain't too pretty. Now, took the liberty too. Glossary of words in step 4 and 5. I need to know what these are. Because we ain't going to stop when we get there. He uses the word exact, nature, wrong, fault, mistake, defect, shortcoming, self-centered, selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, fear, frightened, inconsiderate. I must have a working knowledge of these. Because what will happen is what I've done all the way up to this point in time is I will assume a definition to that word and I will be wrong again. Very important that I have that. Oh, by the way, I found my self sheet. I told you it was there. Yeah. I tried to be rid of self, but I can't get rid of it. Okay, so yeah. Okay. So, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. So then let's see what he says with that. Okay. First, see, I'm starting to get it. He tells us what to do first. That's number one. First, we search the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Then setting it up, and no longer blame game, and no longer victim, and all that. The flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that what? That self. Social security, sex, and thing. Self. That's what is self. Okay. Self manifested in various ways is what had defeated us. We consider its common manifestations, or that's indications. And here's why we're doing this. If I get rid of the things that block me off from God, then and only then can God direct my thinking. When my mind's filled with this crap, resentments, fear, guilt, shame, and remorse because of my sex conduct and harms done to other, God can't get through with that. He can't get to it. Can't get through it. It ain't going to happen. We're facing be rid of these things that are blocking us. Get rid of them promptly and without regret. Until I do this, God can't do what I made a decision to do in step 3. I have to do my part. Until I get rid of those things, God can't direct my thinking. Because these things direct my thinking. Yeah, you'd be surprised. We're thinking we're running the show. I got news for you. Anybody that you were resenting, any person, place, thing, or whatever, they're running the show. The question is, what is directing my thinking? Now remember the manifestations, and we'll talk about it. The manifestations are indications of a selfish, self-centered human. You might want to write this down. Number one, always madder than hell. Damn her, damn them. Look what they've done to me. Always complaining, bitching, moaning, pissing, doing all that. And that is obviously somebody full of resentments. Number two, they're scared to death. You know why? Because they can't count on you. They can't count on me. They can't count on themselves. And certainly they can't count on God because they ain't got one. Always madder than hell. Always scared to death. And you can spot this one a mile away. The third manifestation of selfish, self-centered human being. They're always saying or doing something that hurts somebody. You want to write it down. Always doing is hurting. And you know what that is? Obviously, since God's within us, they're full of guilt, shame, and remorse. Oh, that's right. That's what we're going to inventory, all those things. All of those. All three of them. Very effectively, God out of the mind. Until they're gone, God can't and won't enter my mind. It's that simple. Painful as it is. My head ain't much. I'll give it to you. It's getting less by the day. Ask anybody who knows me. But that's all I got. That's where my business is done. I call it the inventory room, stock room, showroom, whatever you want to got. This is where it's at. This is where the business of life is done, up here. Oh, remember the main problem centers in our mind. So, my mind is my business stock room or warehouse. So when I take my inventory, I go back to the stock room or the warehouse and I look at it. It's a train wreck. No, here's where it is. A third of it's full of resentments. I said, oh my God, they're stacked to the ceiling. A third of it's full of fear. And the other third of the building is full of guilt, shame, and remorse associated with my sex conduct and the harms I've done to others other than the sexual area. And until those things are cleaned out, God can't direct. In order to let God direct my thinking, I got to look at these three common manifestations, and here's how you do it. Go about to see the truth about them before I can get rid of them. I can't get rid of these until I know the truth about them. So I'm going to have to see the truth or the moral inventory. After I see the truth, here's the magic. The book's going to show me how to get rid of them, and most importantly, it's going to show me how to keep them from coming back. So if I can get rid of these things and keep them from coming back in the future, then and only then can God direct my thinking. But until I do my part, God can't and won't. He gave us self-will. I'll give you an example of it, and as corny as it may be, but it's true. When he kicked us out of that garden way back then in that other history book that we talk about now and then, some call it Serenity Park, some call it Garden of Eden. But anyhow, here's how it happened. He had two people back there, Adam and Eve. He told them, you can do anything you want in here, but don't eat the apples off that tree. They said, I got it, boss. So they're out running around. Everything was perfect. Shangri-La, everything was beautiful. And the snake came up to Eve and said, child. And she said, what? She says, what are you doing? You're running around here like a fool listening to him. You got self-will. You can do what you want. She goes, what's that? Says, you don't have to listen to him. I'm an animal. All the rest of us, we got to follow his direction. You can do what you want. He told you not to eat that apple, but you can go ahead and do it. Go ahead. And that was a bad decision. So she told Adam, eat that apple. And by the way, did you know that's why they call it Adam's apple? That's true. There's a reason why men have Adam's apple. That's part of the apple still stuck in the throat. That was Adam's first decision, and it was a bad one. It was a bad one. So anyhow, they ate the apple. God comes walking by and sees the apple gone and eaten. And he jumped them. And he said, all right, you two get over here. He said, you gotta go. This is my show. I direct everything here. And if you were going to run your show, you're going to take it and you're going to get out and you're going to leave. And you ain't coming back. I take care of the things that follow my direction. Now, that may be a little bit embellished, but that's the truth of it. So here's what happened. As he was giving him the boot, I could see it right now, he had tears running down his eyes. But he made a deal. Someone called covenant or whatever. The deal's still good today. He told him, if you ever get sick and tired of being sick and tired of running your show, doing what you want, when you want, how you want, if you've ever had enough and you want to come back here, you can. Under one condition, what I gave you, self-will, you got to give back to me and you can come back in the garden. It's still good from back then to this very day. And that's what we're talking about, free will laying on. And one last thing about that story, after that happened, that snake didn't have a leg to stand on. So anyhow, yeah. But before, guess what, y'all? Before we give it back to him, talking about self-will, guess what? We got to clean it up. He don't want that dirty and nasty. We got to clean it up, and that's what we're going to do. However, until I do this, God can't. Let's see what he says here. It says, resentment is the number one offender. Number one offender. So what it says, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Not some things, not most, not a lot, anything else. Wow, that's power there. Okay. From it stem all, not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, all forms of spiritual disease. And by the way, that's the only time he uses the word disease in this book. The rest of the time he refers it to an illness, a sickness, a malady. He calls alcoholism a spiritual disease one time. Disease one time in this book. Okay? And it says, for we had not only been mentally and physically ill, we had been spiritually sick. So now, it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So, now here we're getting ready down to it. We're not doing too bad. I hope you guys got a couple hours. No, come on, y'all. Resentment! I better know what it is. When we were drinking, that's not what we call the resentment, but I'll tell you what it was. It's fuel of the fire. That's how it got us all here. Resentment. What are they and how do we use them? Resentment. Two words. Re. That always means redo, repaint, replay, retake, do again. Resentment. Pardon my butcher that. That is a Latin word for sentare. And that means feel. So when I have a resentment, I re-feel something. Oh, I get it. Okay. Refeel over and over again. So resentment is re-sent anger. In the fellowship, you hear that word anger and you put a D in front of it, it's danger. And I'm here to tell you that is a probably a modest understatement. So resent is resent anger. Here's what it is. When they do it to me, talking about them, when they hurt me the first time, social security, sex instinct, when they're in the hula hoop and they're messing with it, whether they've done it or I perceive it, it don't matter. My perception is everything. That is a hurt or a wrong. When I play that over again, then it's resent anger or a resentment. First time, it's a hurt or a wrong. When I play it again, it's a resentment, re-feeling it over again, and it's usually anger. So, we find out resentment, obviously, incorrect thinking. Feelings of bitter hate, indignation, which comes from rightly or wrongly held feelings of being injured or offended. Remember, I can't be angry at you unless you are in my space. One of these instincts are hurt or threatened. There's no reason to be mad. Okay? So resentment is incorrect thinking or judgment of others. And we find out not just people, institutions, or principles. Here's why we use these resentments. We use them to resist changing. We use them not to change ourselves. And we use them to transfer blame. Remember, a victim. That's why we use them. Here's the greatest thing about it. People get pissed off when I say, oh, that's good here. Resentment. I make myself sick and I blame it on other people. That's the truth of a resentment. A resentment is the distortion that we create for our protection so we can stay sick. It's like a callus. Now, I'm still exercising, even whatever. You know, I'm a long-distance runner. And if I don't have the right shoes, or even if I do, I will get a callus on my feet, my toes, or whatever. That's nature's way of protecting itself. Guess what? That's what a resentment is. It's like a callus. It protects that. That's why we have resentments, is to protect our sickness and our illness and blame other people. It's the same thing. That's what alcoholics use. It's a wall of protection that we put the blame on other people. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Resentments are a lie and not true. And we use them to escape and hide from the truth. They started from the truth, but if you play that over and over and over, it becomes a lie. It was based on the truth, but it becomes a lie. Once again, I can't have a resentment unless there's a threat or I perceive a basic threat to one of my instincts. I can't resent somebody or something unless you do something to it. Here's one that we don't even look about or don't even think about. But my God, it is the fabric of every real alcoholic. You can't resent somebody or something unless you resent your position in life. And when you play that over again, that turns into self-pity. The poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. Resentment is a pattern of thinking that we, an escape mechanism that turns into a trap. It works for a while, but remember, it's springing. You set the trap and you step into it, and then you're victim to it. All, I'm not going to say some, most, a lot, all resentments, we're going to talk about justified and unjustifiable, live rent-free in your head. So whatever it is, whoever it is, whatever, when they live rent-free in your head, they control what you think, what you decide, and how you live. All, I'm going to say it again. Not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few. All resentments keep you in prison. Whatever you got, whatever you're resenting, they keep you in prison. Because guess what? You're the jailer, so you're in there with that. You ain't getting out. 24/7, you're in there. They've got more freedom than you do being the jailer. All resentments, said it again, keep you sick. All resentments are like a boomerang. They always come back, and it's a double-edged sword. And like I said, that turns into self-resentment. Play that enough, and it turns into self-pity. All resentments, justified, unjustified, keep you from God. That's the bottom line, and they control your mind. In resentments, we talk about the anger that we plan to use on others, we use on ourselves, and make ourselves sick. And the only way to be happy in the future is to get rid of the past. Resentments, that is. So it's absolutely phenomenal on how he does it. Gives us first instructions. Now, I'm going to hand out what we got on the board. These are called inventory sheets. And I say this. Please don't look at column 4 and 5. As soon as I say that, everybody looks at it. But that's not how you're supposed to do it. I know the alcoholic tell them, all right, no, well, reverse. Please look at 4 and 5. Nobody will. Okay, I got it now. Okay. Okay. What I'm handing out to you is what's on the board. So come back. This is obviously week number 1. We have resentments. Next week we do fears. a little bit of sex, and then, of course, wrong's done the other. And that's what it is. It's the whole package there. Now, when we get to column 3 and 5, this one gives you some nifty help. First sheet is column 3, what instincts are hurt or threatened. Second page is column number 5. So, now here's how we do it. Much to your amazement. Yeah, a little bit of English class here. When he uses a period, that means stop. When he uses a comma, that means pause. So here are the directions, the instructions that he did, but this is already filled out. Now, much to your surprise, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper, period. That would be column number 1. I am resentful at. Don't have to be sober very long to know who you hate. Yeah, I said it. It's not that I don't like you, I hate you. Come on, y'all. You don't have to be sober very long to know who you resent, what you resent, what you hate, what you dislike, whatever. That's people, that's institutions, places, principles. Okay? And you write them down. Now, I know we are taught in the English language in the school system, go from left to right. I'm going to ask you not to do that. Because to shift gears, like what you got to do all these columns, if your mind's like mine, it's going to go tilt real quick. It's going to blow your head off. And you'll probably say, screw this. I'm just, you know, I can't do this, or I'm just going to write my autobiography. So I suggest you go top to bottom. And when you do that, you might want to leave a couple spaces because, much to your surprise, you may have more than one resentment against whatever you're doing. So we're going to use my inventory, and please, this is serious. I like to have fun and whatever, but there is some that have actually had people come up and do their for real inventories out of the audience. And unfortunately, somebody disclosed some very personal information that involved another person in the fellowship, caused a divorce, caused somebody to drink, and caused somebody to die. So when you're doing your inventory, I'm going to do my inventory. We're not going to do anybody else's, so need to be careful on what we're doing here, because this is, oh, that's right, vital and crucial, how it was ugly. And how it happened is, the person doing the inventory was having an affair with somebody that was a longtime member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and his wife happened to be in AA too. It didn't go over too good, and it really got ugly, and it really had that type of effect. So when I say this is my inventory, what I've done. So, much to your surprise, I'm resentful at my wife. Now, when I said to leave a couple spaces, I should have said a couple pages. Okay, come on. She can take it, y'all. Come on, man. No. By the way, we'll talk about that. So anyhow, I put my wife. Dude, we ain't got enough time to go over all those. Well, okay, that's right. Next one. The police. I don't know who I hated more. Okay, so come on, y'all. Now, everybody's got one of these, too. My boss. And then this one I talk about, I still foam a little bit at the mouth, is this one, the IRS. That's the Internal Revenue Service. So, real simple, this is the best way. I never knew an alcoholic in the world who didn't know they were mad at. Top to bottom, I get it. That's instruction number 1. Okay, I can do that. Okay, that's what it says, okay? Obviously, we'll do that, okay? Now, we said stop the bottom. We do this, obviously, so we don't remember, or we remember, do this. Everybody's got self-will, and the game of life goes on. So here's real simple. Everybody's got self-will. Everybody, and this is how we got resentments. I call the life the game of life. Everybody has got a little bit of self-will, and obviously it's self versus self. It's like a football game. You are going to get batted around in the game of life. You better buckle up, Buttercup, because it's coming. So say as I go through life, which we have to, somebody does something that hurts or threatens my instinct, obviously, makes up self, and those are listed on self sheets and broken down so we understand them. Anyway, it makes me mad or angry. It creates anger, not resentment. It's a wrong when they did it to me, normal reaction. But like I said, it doesn't become a resentment until I re-feel it. Think in my mind over and over again. As I play the whole scene over in my mind, I realize that something about me, I'm not truthful with myself. As I play the scene over, I distort it, the picture a little bit. Their part is a little worse, makes my part less, and makes my pain deeper. Oh, you know about that. Come on, y'all. The pain and misery, nobody knows what it is to be an alcoholic, right? Now, let me play that over and over enough in my mind, and it will no longer resemble the truth. Only God, I'm going to say it again, only God knows the truth. We operate on what we perceive to be the truth, but guess what? Wrong again. Give you an example of how the alcoholic and the resentment. It's like watching, and I love sports, all of them, especially football. And they have the replay machine when there's a cheap thing. They have a bad cheap shot or whatever. I call that a resentment machine. We got it in our minds. I replay that like they do on sports, and each time it looks like it's a little cheaper of a shot, a little bit more painful, and that's what my mind does. I've got a resentment replay machine in my mind. I play it over and over and over and over. Each time we replay it, it makes it a little bit worse. It makes them a whole lot worse, and before you know it, I wasn't doing nothing. I was minding my own business. Yeah. Now and then, there's a bad day when they won't do anything to you. So then I turn on what they're thinking machine. So I ain't gonna, you know what I'm saying? If you ain't doing something to me, it's what you're thinking about me. Okay. Like I said, we play that, what they're thinking, and it's a bad deal about these resentments, and this is why we do it. It's a bad deal. Because like I said, we play it long enough, and it comes back as a double-edged sword. Once again, you resent yourself for being in that position, what happened to you, and that's what we call self-resentment. Play that long enough, and that's self-pity. Self-pity is the sickest a human being can be. And we alcoholics love self-pity. I'll speak for myself. I get up in the morning, used to. I get my self-pity like a cloak, like a king's cloak. That's why I wore the purple tonight. I'd put that on, and I'd go sit on the throne and wear this cloak of self-pity as a dignity and honor. And I'd get off the throne to start the day, and I'd say, "Here I come, mean old world. I know you're going to do it to me again." Yeah, come on, y'all. By the way, I found out I'm not that damn important. But the reason that we love self-pity, you know why we have it? It's a sick way that we can build our self-esteem. That's why we just love it. And alcoholics sweat it. We urinate it. You sleep with it. It is the fabric of our existence is self-pity. And here's what it is. Because just think, if everybody picks on me, I must be pretty darn important, huh? But there's no way God can enter a mind that's filled with that crap. Absolutely impossible. So once again, whatever we're resenting controls the way we think, the way we act, and we go on. Before God can do something about it, we have to do something about our resentments. And that's exactly what the book shows me on page 65. But the problem is it's filled out. We didn't understand how to do it. So here we are once again. So simple. So we asked ourselves, obviously, the first instruction, why we're angry. Don't have to be sober long to do it, how they control and dominate. Here's what I learned about the first column that was so unbelievable. I didn't realize how many I had. I was consumed. I mean, far back, I mean, just, I couldn't believe everybody and everything. I just was just mortified. When I wrote those down, and you see them in black and white, they all were rumbling around for years up there, but when I put them down there, I said, my God, you are madder than hell at everybody and everything. You always have been. Yeah, couldn't believe it. Knew it kind of, but couldn't believe it until I got it. But here's what it is. Obviously, what comes from that is obviously I found out how these resentments controlled and dominated me. That was the fabric of my existence. That's what I found out in column one. Second instruction, real simple, okay? And it says, we asked ourselves why we were angry, period. The cause. Why was I mad at wife? Why was I mad at police? Why was I mad at boss? Why was I mad at IRS? Never met an alcoholic who had to be sober too long who didn't know why they hated somebody or why they were pissed off, huh? Okay. Real simple. Hard to believe. She left me and took the kids. What the hell? The nerve of her. Like I said, and do yourself a favor when you're doing this, the cause, four, maybe five words. That's it. You can bleed out when you got your sponsor. You can go on for hours and hours and hours, but don't do it because you ain't got enough paper to save that for that point in time. She left me. Took the kids and went. There was a lot more with her, but we're just doing it. She left me. Took kids. That was a dark day. The police. Now why are they mad? Because every time I involved with them, it wasn't to buy tickets at the charity ball. It didn't work like that. I got arrested. I was in trouble. Put arrested. Not some time, not most time. No, it was the ticket arrested. My boss. Well, you know them bosses. Why was I angry? The cause of why? He told me what to do. He bossed me. So that was it. Okay. But we're going to put down what he ended up doing to me. We're going to use this example. Him, like my wife, must have been conspiracy. He fired me. That was after she left me, so they were in together. Fired me. The IRS. I got a lot of money one time, and I decided that I was going to make time payments later on my schedule. Anyhow, they caught me. They caught me. Okay, so the cause is they were going to put me in jail. And along with the jail's fines, interest, penalty, yada, yada, yada. So real simple. Who I'm mad at, what they did. I get it. Now where it starts getting a little bit more interesting, if you will, obviously, here's the deal about it. Here's the magic in the second column. I found out it's not so much who did it to me, it's what they did to me. In other words, I would have been as mad at my mistress if she would have done the same thing as my wife. I would have been as mad at my boss if the police, so in other words, it took the sting out of took the personality out of column number one. Found out I wasn't so much mad at them, it's what they did. Column number one, found out how I'm dominated by anger. Column two, I found out it's not the ones in column one that did it. It's what they did that got me going. I could substitute anybody in this room. If you did me like that, I'd hate you as bad as I did the people listed on there. But here's the magic of why this is. We are starting that process of lifetime forgiveness and developing the best relationship possible. And that we close up with that prayer. Forgive me my trespasses as I forgive you. So if I'm going to ask for forgiveness, guess what? I got to do the same. Whatever you bind somebody with, you are bound to. So that's why the magic about it is I find out it's not them in column one. It's what they did. And the forgiveness process starts to happen unknowingly or knowingly now that we have it. It's absolutely powerful. We have to be forgiven that. Okay, now, column number three. And that's where it says right here. Real simple. Okay, in most cases, we found out that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore and we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations, which had been interfered with? Here's what I never looked at before. So, on the resentments that I have on the board, we get our sheet. You got it right there. Column 3, I'm going to take it off of this. Going to go ahead and put the social instinct. We're not going to break them all down. I will on there, but for time, we'll put the social instinct. We're going to put the security instinct, and they're all broken down. And the sex instinct. This is where I never, ever would look at this before. Ever. Of course, I didn't know what self was, so how could I be looking at something that I didn't? But this is an absolutely amazing process that we do that. Like I said, top to bottom, we'll go ahead and do this. Now, it's pretty simple on here, obviously, how it affects this. Now, do you think when she left, and took the kids, what it did to social instinct? What do you think did to companionship? Hey, wipe that out. What do you think it did to self-esteem? My God, what are they going to think about me? Wipe that out. What do you think it did to my pride? Whatever it was gone. And my ambitions for the future. So that son of a gun, she wiped me all out in that area. We're going to put a check mark next to that. Security instinct, the material. Well, you know damn well, Ohio's a 50-50 state. The man gets outside and the woman gets inside. That's of the house. By the time I'm done with the judges and attorneys and lawyers, I am broke. Wipe me out materially. Emotionally. Well, sure, I loved her with what I had. And you took my four kids. Our four kids. My own flesh and blood, you took them. How dare you do that? Did that wipe that out? You better believe it. Ambitions. We'll put a check mark next to that. Sex instinct. Got three areas there. Acceptable. Well, I guarantee you, when she left, I wasn't getting any more. Okay, so, yeah, that was gone. Now, I didn't have any hidden instinct, but I suppose I would have been so upset. If I wouldn't have gotten any there either. And the ambition. So we're going to put a check mark next to social instinct. So you can see, with this resentment, she wiped out all of self. How damn her. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see what he did in this book real quick here. We'll do it. I'm going to go through this whole book real quick here. Okay, we're using as definite this example. Number one, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. The cause, his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, Brown might get my job at the office. How did that affect him? Sex relations, sex, self-esteem, sex relations, self-esteem, security, self-esteem. See, he's already had that filled out, but now that I've got this sheet and I know what it is, it makes sense to me. Mrs. Jones, she's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. Personal relationship, self-esteem, and fear. Well, I don't even know Brown or Mrs. Jones, but I hate him already. Okay? Come on, y'all. Okay? The employer, unreasonable. He probably wants me to work when I'm there. Okay, yeah. Unjust, overbearing, threatens to fire me for padding my expense account. What does that affect? Self-esteem, fear, security, obviously. My wife misunderstands and nags, likes old Brown. Uh-oh. Wants a house put in her name. Oh, my God, I'm really starting to not like his wife. How did that affect him? Pride, personal sex relations, security. Now, here's the magic. Here's when and how far back you go. We went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Okay. So obviously we find that out. Okay. Then it goes on to say, when we finished, we considered carefully the first thing apparent was that this world and its people are often quite wrong. To conclude others were wrong as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome that people continued to wrong us, we stayed sore. But sometimes it was remorse and we stayed sore at ourselves. Self-pity is going to come around. It says, the more we fought, the more we tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Okay, here's where it is. It's beautiful. Here's why we do it. Remember, he tells us when, how, and why, and what will happen if we don't. It's plain that a life which includes deep resentment, leads to only futility and unhappiness. So if you want to be dry and miserable, don't do this. But it gets worse than that. To the price extent that we permit these, that we squander hours that might have been worthwhile. Here's the real danger. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance growth of a spiritual experience, the business resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. If I don't do this, I'm going to die. And there's more ways than dying physically. I can die mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and then I will die physically as well. And you know what? To die 1,000 deaths, if you're a real alcoholic, you know what I'm talking about with that. So, here's what it is. For when harboring such feelings, resentments, we shut ourselves from the sunlight of the Spirit. Capital S, that is God. The insanity returns and we drink again. The insanity precedes the drink, never follows it. Stupidity follows it. So it tells me if I don't do this, the insanity of alcoholism is going to return and I will drink again. In other words, that futility and unhappiness, I will be so restless, irritable, discontent, full of fear, guilt, shame, and remorse, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. My mind won't remember what alcohol did to me. It'll only remember what it did for me. It gave me the sense of ease and comfort, and I will drink again. Not maybe, I will. Remember, vital and crucial step. So now it says, the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. For us to drink is to die. Matter of life and death. Pretty good reasons. If we were to live, it doesn't say not drink again, live. We had, not should, could, ought to, be free of anger. The grouch, which is the resentment, and the brainstorm, that's our thinking, were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men. Dubious is obviously causing doubt, skeptical, or questionable. The dubious luxury of normal men, but for us alcoholics, these things are poison. So, when you're doing this, obviously you'll see a pattern come up. What part of self gives you the most trouble? It may be social, it may be security, it may be sex. In my case, it was almost all of them, but sometimes you will develop a pattern. Remember the magic of column one, found out how angry I was. Column two, I found out it wasn't so much them, it's what they did. Here's the magic of column number three. I finally found out where anger comes from. I thought it was something that just happened. Bull! It comes from column number three. I'm not getting what I want, how I want, and when I want it in the manner, or I'm afraid that you're going to do something with it, and then I react with anger. I choose to do that. It's not something that happens. That's the cause of it. Finally, for the first time in my life, because I was always angry. I was always, always angry. Okay, I had a problem with anger, always reacted with it, said and did things, and I was sorry. No sooner did I say, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, and I would do the same damn thing again. And again, and again. We talk about the yets in AA. How about if we talk about those agains? Those are as painful or more worse. So, I thought it was nothing that I could do about when I found out when the anger comes from. Remember, selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. That's where the anger comes from. Self. Self. That dirty four-letter word. Okay? So, I can do anything about a problem until I understand it. Now what it is, anger comes from a threat to my basic instincts, and I choose to act with that. And here's how it is. If my basic instincts are in check, as God gave them to me, God given there for good. If they are in check and I'm right with God, you can do about just anything, say or do anything, and it's going to be like water's going to roll off the back. I'll give you an example of how that is. Beautiful Mrs. Veely. Sometimes we'll have a discussion. Is that a nice way to say it? Okay. And she'll say and do something. And you know what? If I'm right, if these instincts are right, I'm right with God. I'll say the poor old thing, that's just the way they are, and I'll go about my business. 2 weeks later, same thing happens, same words are said. I'm not right with self, I'm not right with God, and guess what? It's on, buddy. We're going to get it on, and we are going to do it. So what's the difference between those two scenarios? It wasn't her. It was me. And you know what? I can't do a damn thing about her. I can't do a damn thing about you or anybody else. So these are the keys to the kingdom. These are the keys to freedom and happiness. Anger comes from that. And like I said, sure enough. So I can't do anything about them. And here's how it is, real quick. I learned that I can't do anything about them, but with God's help, maybe I can learn how to do something, how I react to it. I don't have to get angry. If I get angry and upset, it's because I've chosen to react that way because of the threat to that. And when it talks about squandering hours, let me tell you a personal experience. It wasn't hours. It wasn't weeks. It wasn't months. It was years for me. You can tell by looking at the color on here, this ain't blonde. I'm not getting any younger. And I'll be damned if I'm going to give any more time to them, talking about people, places, institution, to rob what little time I got left. Don't know how long it is, but it ain't long enough, let me tell you, because life is beautiful today. So that's why we're doing it. So resentment is a waste of time, never straightens up a relationship with another, never made me feel better, only feel worse, never made me money. They are a bad deal. And here's what it is, and here's how we do it. So it goes on to this, okay? We turn back to the list, again, for it held the key to the future. We're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. It's like this. When I look out this door, I can see Chris. Hi, Chris, how are you? But if I look at it from a different entirely angle, now I can see Charles are out there. What I'm saying is I always looked at these resentments of what they were doing to me, talking about the people, places, the thing I resented. Now I'm looking at it as, what has the resentment done and doing to me? I'm looking at it from an entirely different angle. That resentment is killing me, whereas I was always focused on them, him, her, whatever I was resenting. Absolutely fascinating. Like I said, entirely different angle. So now, resentments, like I said, control and dominate the way you think, act, live, and let them live rent free. I made the decision to let God direct my thinking. So if these people, living or dead, either justified or unjustified, when they see the truth about them on paper, they look stupid. When I go through this, just the first three columns, most of them will go away. Now, here's the magic where they really will go away, obviously, and this is it. It goes on like this, and it says, we began to see that the people in the world dominate us, and that state of wrongdoing others fancy real we had the power to kill. How could we escape? We saw that the resentments must, not should, could, ought to, must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So obviously, this was our course. Remember, we couldn't get over alcohol. We can't get over self without God's help. Guess what? We can't get over these resentments without God's help. Remember, I promise you, there's a prayer in every step. From the third step on, we're getting ready to hear the first prayer, resentment prayer, step four prayer, part one, however you want to label it. And it goes like this. Realize that the people wrong us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms the way they deserved ourselves, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God. When you ask God, you're praying. So here it is. Four steps.